in October of 2017, researchers from MRIT published their research on a never-before-seen concept, a liquid metal capable of producing two-dimensional metal oxide materials. Now, for those of you out there, don't be immediately put off. Metal oxides are basically compounds that contain metal bound to oxygen. Of course, they could be much more complicated at times. One of the more simpler ones is rust, being a combination of iron and oxygen. And these are used in many electronic components. And this might not sound super cool to the everyday person, but this is putting us on the path towards the next generation of electronic components. Hello, Dr. Torben Daneker.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. You're one of the lead researchers of this materials breakthrough. I mean, you're a research fellow at the RMIT University School of Engineering, and you do have a strong background in materials chemistry. And your research was funded by Fleet from the ARC Centre of Excellence.
We're working together with the Fleet Centre of Excellence. So the Centre of Excellence for people that don't know much about this. It's a very large initiative, actually, where the Australian government is investing quite heavily into the development of new electronics that use less electricity, so energy-efficient electronics.
And that's really important in this day and age because Moore's Law is kind of coming to an end.
That is correct, and also it's actually quite surprising. Nowadays, we already use 7% of all of the electricity that is generated just for server farms. So that's a huge amount of energy that we are producing that is going straight to data centers of Google and the like. That is becoming an increasing problem because this amount of electricity is roughly doubling each decade. In 20 years' time, we are basically in a bit of a pickle. We have to produce a lot of energy to run our servers.
I hear that's also a climate change problem as well, with the CO2 emissions just from, you know, you got Bitcoin mining, which is taking up a lot of valuable server time, along with everything else. All that high processing power comes at a cost.
Definitely it does. And the more we do with the Internet of Things, technologies such as that, we need more and more technology and more computing time and more server farms. So we really have to come up with some new electronics that really minimize the energy that is used.
And speaking of which, what is it that your researchers and you and your colleagues have actually discovered with these materials?
Right. So what we have done is we use liquid metals. A lot of people, when they think about liquid metals, they think of maybe mercury or that old Terminator movie from the 1990s.
T-1000?
Or 1980s even.
Yeah,
the T-1000, yes. So what we're working with is actually not like that. So we are working with liquid metals that are made mostly out of gallium. So gallium is sort of relatively unknown chemical element, but this gallium melts at about 30 degrees Celsius.
Oh, right.
So on a hot day in Melbourne, it will actually just melt. And we then made some specific alloys with these gallium, with this element, and they melt at even lower temperatures.
Oh, right.
It's a non-toxic material. It's a very safe material. You can even buy it off eBay nowadays. This material has sort of interesting properties that it will oxidize when it comes in contact with air.
Mm-hmm.
And what is exciting is that this oxide that forms at the surface of this liquid metal is just a few atoms thick. That basically provides a pathway towards producing very, very thin materials that are just a few atoms thick, and that is very exciting for electronics. What we found then is that we could design more alloys, so we could alloy other elements that usually melt at very high temperatures into this liquid metal inside the actual gallium. We found that if you get the chemistry right, this added element, even if you just add 1% of it, it will actually form the oxide layer. And that is actually the exciting step here, that we essentially use the liquid metal as a solvent. The liquid metal does not do actually anything. The only thing we use it for is dissolve other metals. In our case, we worked with hafnium. This hafnium will oxidize on the surface of the liquid metal and make very, very thin crystals or sheets of hafnium oxide. And hafnium oxide is a very exciting material for the electronic industry. It's heavily used as ultra-thin layers as an insulator to make transistors. So that is what the excitement was about.
So it's kind of like getting the skin on top of custard, except all around the custard, and you can sort of peel it off?
Exactly, and it works surprisingly easily. So it's actually enough to just touch the surface with silicon metal with some sort of a substrate. So we just use the wafer.
Mm-hmm.
So we just touch it very gently, and what happens is that the oxide layer sticks to the substrate. And as you peel it off, the liquid metal stays on the table or wherever you have it. What you can do is just peel off that top layer, as you said, like custard, and that is what we're working with.
Right, yeah, because I got to see an image of what you're doing. I like to call it the snail trail synthesis almost. Because you get like a slug-like blob, yeah, and it's, you sort of get like that slimy trail of the oxide layer from the actual the gallium metal. That's really, really cool. But what's the difference between this and other ways of separating layers?
Well, the first thing is that this is really, really simple. I always describe it as so simple that I could get my parents, who are retired now, I could tell them what to do, and they would be able to do it in their kitchen. So you don't need anything for it. You need something like a stove, a hot plate, something like that,
mm-hmm.
a beaker, and a bit of liquid metal. The liquid metal is not toxic, so you can just do it anywhere you want.
Yeah, you could just order it off of eBay, as you said.
Essentially, you could, yes. And other methods that people have done before, you need very expensive equipment that costs hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars to put down these layers. The problem is that these layers that they can produce, they're not even as good as what we are making because they're a lot thicker. Our materials are about half a nanometer thick, so that's about three atoms.
Ooh.
And what people could be doing before, or were able to do before, is typically about 3 to 5 nanometers thick. A lot thicker. It's nearly 10 times thicker.
And for more expensive as well. So you've just like really...
And a lot more expensive.
Yeah, broke the ceiling on that.
We've been working with liquid metals for a very long time in our group. We did more... In the past, we did more sort of little toy things with it and sort of said, okay, it's cool, it's liquid, it's metal, so let's make some liquid antennas and things like that. But then we decided to do something maybe more useful with it, and we found that actually nobody really looks at the chemistry of liquid metals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a chemist by training, so I then had a few ideas. We got one of our PhD students to work on it, and he did a fantastic job, got these amazing results. It was quite exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, shout outs to your PhD students, eh?
Oh, definitely. Ali, he's a fantastic person. And he did rough hard work on this project.
Right, right. So we talked a lot about 2D materials and how thinner is better. Why exactly is like two-dimensional, as thin as possible, better for electronics?
If you've got quite a thick material, let's say 10 nanometers or something, the electron that has to travel through this layer
mm-hmm.
can essentially get lost. So it can bounce into impurities, all of these things. Rather than going straight into the direction that you want, it can also go up and down.
Ah.
So by having a two-dimensional crystal, you really confine the electron in this very thin layer of a few atoms, so it actually has nowhere to go but where you actually want it to go.
Yeah, and that in turn saves a lot of energy as well.
Exactly, because the energy is getting lost whenever our electron bounces into an interface, into a grain boundary, into an impurity. Every time that happens, it releases a little bit of heat. That heat needs to go somewhere. So in these server farms, all of that energy that I spoke about before that is being consumed there is actually just cooling. So they've got giant air conditioners in these server farms that take all the heat away. And that is the main problem.
Oh, right, right. That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to reduce a lot of the heat off the lot of the heat that sort of comes out of these server farms, so you don't have to spend as much energy on cooling. And
exactly.
You win-win, yeah.
It's a win-win. So at the moment, an actual computer chip per area, per square centimeter, produces more heat than a cooking hot plate.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of energy that is getting produced there that has to go somewhere. Otherwise, you would just burn down the building. So you've got giant air conditioners that take care of that heat. By making things ultra thin, you need a lot less of that. Then, of course, this is just the beginning. So right now, we've made very thin dielectrics. So that will allow us to also make faster electronics, because dielectric, which is an insulator, the thicker it is, the slower the switching. That will allow us to make fast electronics. But this technique can be used to make a lot of different two-dimensional materials, which are all very exciting for electronics industry and other industries. Basically, this is sort of the prototype work that we've done, and we said, hey, we can use liquid metals as a solvent, but really a lot of work that can be done now using this concept.
Right, so you've just opened up the possibilities, and there's a lot of novel avenues you guys can pursue.
We we have now actually a team working on these concepts of about 8 or 9 PhD students that investigate different aspects of this new type of chemistry, finding that it's actually quite versatile, so you can do a lot of cool things with it. So a lot of the work is ongoing, and I hopefully people can read about it in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely want to see where this research is going. You guys worked on your research for this for like 18 months or something. What were some of the setbacks and breakthroughs that you sort of had along the journey?
The research took quite a lot of time because it's a very new concept. So we had to basically invent everything from scratch.
Ooh.
And it took a lot of time to actually optimize the processes and everything, then to really confirm that what we're claiming it does, it really does do. So we had to double check, because it's a very new type of work, we had to really confirm our data multiple ways, which we did in the end, and to be really convincing.
Yeah, you'd have to look at it from like every kind of like ography that you can. To make sure that what you're producing is actually legit, because there's like no real fallback otherwise. I was just going to ask, what kind of you've done a lot of publishing in like Nature Communications, the Journals of Materials Chemistry, and recently with this in Science. These are really prestigious journals. What's the process like getting into these things? Did you have to like say I've got the biggest thing since sliced atoms, or did you have to like just hope your work just showed?
Well, I have to say that we are a team of some very successful, also more senior researchers in our team. And obviously the name carries a little bit.
Mm.
But of course, you have to always be on the top of your game and do very exciting science. In the past couple of years, we've just been lucky, I guess, that we always had sort of the right instinct to do work that people will be able to get excited about.
It is very exciting now that we're sort of opening up this can of worms of what's possible. So with the enhancement of these materials in electronics, could we expect the sci-fi future that every kind of fiction has? Because with the ending of Moore's Law, with our current state of materials, it's a bit of a mess.
It's already at the point. So a lot of people say that Moore's Law has already ended, probably about a couple of years ago. So if you've noticed, when you purchase a new laptop now, your processor is essentially the same as 5 years ago.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, I mean, you still buy an i7 and that's it. Yeah? So it's, maybe not 5 years ago. Let's say 3 years ago. But there's not a lot of movement in the speed of processing at these days. So you could argue that Moore's Law has already ended.
Hmm.
In the future, what is actually required is complete shift. So we have to get rid of silicon, essentially, or silicon transistors, and we have to come up with a new technology that can actually be faster.
And in this case, it would be these metal oxide layers.
Potentially. They will definitely play a role in it. A lot of people now talk about topological insulators, but that's a complete different can of worms.
Mm-hmm.
These are a new class of materials that we believe actually can also be made with our liquid metal synthesis. There's a lot of scopes there, a lot of new ideas that are coming out about how to overcome Moore's Law and come up with a new technology post-silicon.
Yeah, very good points. How does your, the new, technique, you got metal oxide layers being produced, almost two-dimensional metal oxide layers. How does this compete with the likes of graphene, and do you think they would be complementing each other?
Yeah, they're certainly complementing. Graphene is an amazing material, but graphene is a conductor. So to make a device, an electronic device, you need conductors, you need insulators, you need semiconductors. All of these materials have to come together to make a very well-functioning device. Our metal oxides, they're certainly going to be insulators, so the dielectrics, that essentially be used as very, very thin spacers between the different layers. So that's a very crucial role that has to be fulfilled, and that's where our metal oxides come into play. Once you've got a metal oxide that is two-dimensional, you can actually convert it into other chemicals as well. So you can go from an oxide to a sulfide, to a selenide, to those sort of materials.
Oh, wow.
And then suddenly you've got, and it's all very simple chemistry, so we've published a few papers on that. You can easily convert one of the oxide layers into a sulfide or selenide. And these materials are fantastic semiconductors, very exciting materials. we can really produce a family or like a library of different compounds that can be put together and make different devices.
Yeah, I could kind of see it in my head like a family tree almost, where you can descend from just the metal oxide into all the different materials that it could potentially become.
A lot of people compare it a little bit like playing with Lego blocks. So each of the materials is a different Lego block, and you just sandwich it on top of each other. and that's essentially what's being done when people are making these devices. They put a layer of graphene, then maybe they put a layer of oxide in between, a bit of semiconductor on top, and that's your device.
Wow. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.